From international who's who to CNN. From film criticism to royalty. From South Africa to London. And now to the midweek drive on Siren FM. It's Richard Fitzwilliams.
Or as we like to say, the official Thriller remix with the Richard Fitzwilliams ident there. Did you ever feel you'd actually be juxtaposed with the late Vincent Price, Richard?
Well, no, though you do flatter me, because Vincent Price's voice, of course, was an absolute treasure. I mean, if you think of The Mask of the Red Death, I mean, the memories are so fond. But I have to admit that I'm pretty terrified of horror films, so of course I saw far fewer of his films than aficionados of the genre.
Oh, well, never mind. You know, you have to just work through a whole range of things, and you'll be delighted to know that we have Leslie and Francesca Furman back with us in the studio together with Jodie Orton. But there is a bit of a shocking news thing that I have to break.
What is this?
Shocking, say, Richard. If you're not sitting down at present, I'd advise you to possibly just take a few moments to breathe and remember to do that. Now, we know over the past few months, we've spoken regularly to Joy Knight, and we know that Joy has had a passion for the phenomenon known as Morris dancing.
It's a forgery. It doesn't really exist other than in old films and in legends and folklore.
It would seem that Leslie and Francesca Furman, not content with actually becoming sort of semi-regular presenters as far as the Midweek Drive packages is concerned, and also regular presenters on Southside Broadcasting, your sister station, are also putting together this package, because Leslie, you have been encountering Morris dancers and you've been booking them for your show.
I certainly have, Alex. Yes, good morning, Richard. How are you?
Well, good morning, and I hope that you'll take the opportunity to deny this rumour. It's just one of these little gags, these little jokes that you throw in, you know, just to put me off the scent before I discuss something serious, like the guard, for example.
Well, the thing is, Richard, at Whitby on Saturday, there was the Whitby Folk Festival, and there were about, eight or nine different Morris dancers with the bell chanteliers.
Eight or nine different Morris dancers, Richard.
Fantastic. I mean,
eight or nine people participating in this weird sport. I mean, were these people exhumed, may I ask? I mean, you did mention Vincent Price, though. You know, in certain horror movies, persons from the past could, so to speak, return to life, perhaps temporarily, to perform these weird rituals. I wouldn't say satanic, no, they're not as interesting as that. Remember the Wicker Man? At least the pagans were lively there.
Precisely. So this is, I thought she'd taken leave of her senses, but no, it seems as though it's an ongoing scenario. And, you know, she claimed she was actually showing Jodie how to actually do the Thriller choreography in the studio this morning. I think there's some secret Morris dancing there. The hankies were a second away from being brought out. That's all I can say.
Well, I mean, it's all that one can say when one is dealing with a topic that simply all but defies reason. I mean, if you actually look at people performing this, and I have seen it once because it was an International Red Cross charity evening, and there was no way of avoiding it. Angela Rippon choreographed it superbly. She was in charge of it, but she included this one act which, I mean, left me aghast and determined never again to see it.
Precisely. And as you know, Angela's one of our team, so it's however, breathe, as I say, keep breathing, that's the important thing. Don't let it become part of the panic attack that someone walks through. Before we go into a couple of classic movies that are actually around, I think it's fair to say, was it Francesca, you were interested in sort of finding out from Richard whether he actually was royalty or whether he just had an interest in royalty. I think I clarified this for you yesterday, but, you know, I do think the campaign maybe to get a knighthood, you know, Sir Richard Fitzwilliams, it sort of fits quite nicely, could start here. Anyway, over to you.
Thanks for that, Alex.
Hello.
Hi, Richard. I was looking at your website a few days ago, and you've done so many different types of work. Have you actually got a speciality?
Probably the answer is no, because if you do public relations, the promoting figurative art shows, and occasional authors, and the very occasional abstract show, and then there, of course, are my films as a film critic, and then again as a royal commentator, and then I also, as you probably saw, do some lecturing and some writing, and occasionally also review exhibitions and plays. I'm reviewing Journey's End, which is about to end on the 3rd of September at in the West End, something that I would advise anyone to see. So it is a mix. I suppose if there's been a consistency, it's been movies since I was almost hesitate to say the word toddler, but I don't know why when you're five or so forth, you get obsessed with this sort of thing. But the mix is what's fascinating, and also there's never a dull moment, because if you consider them before the royal wedding, the wedding obviously of William and Catherine is what I'm thinking of, there was no royal story before they were engaged, no major royal story for almost 2 years. So it's important to have several things in which you specialise, because obviously if one isn't operative, others are.
Moving onwards to Journey's End, I was fortunate enough to see Jason Connery, one of our colleagues a few years ago, actually perform in the play back in the 80s. It had a powerful punch then, and that was, about 70 years after the First World War. I would have thought with the anniversary of the First World War just around the corner now, a little over 90 years ahead of the whole thing from that point of view, it still packs quite an emotional wallop, Richard.
It does, and, you know, when one just has to admire the way this play was written, and the it's rather sad, actually, that R.C. Sheriff, in his life, the hatred, obviously, of the deaths and horrors of war was combined with a tremendous admiration for the Camera D and, of course, of his regiment. And when he died, he never married, he was 79. And it was his regiment that, throughout his life, according to the film programme, meant more to him than anything else. He didn't actually intend it, perversely enough, as an anti-war play in the sense that we normally would use that phrase. But it certainly was, to me, it shows the ghastliness and the horror of it. But, of course, together with that, there is the interaction between the different characters, which is so absolutely fascinating. And here you've got an ensemble, which, I mean, they're perfect. They're absolutely superb. And I would advise anyone, there are still a very few seats available. It is at the Duke of York's Theatre. And, I mean, this is a wonderful production, and it's lost none of its power. I haven't seen it since the 1970s. And it is absolutely terrific. It's set during the very last months of the war, the German push before the Americans are able to build up their forces. And it's just the tension is so palpable, and the climax is so moving.
Is it fair to say, Richard, that those folk who actually saw the Blackadder series based in the First World War might possibly think that they channeled some of the areas of Journey's End and maybe did a parody of it in terms of the trench humour that was coming across?
Yes, I think particularly the character of Lieutenant Raleigh would, in a different context, obviously, because here, I mean, he is the archetypal public schoolboy and phrases such as righto and so forth, you can see that adapted into Blackadder.
Jolly you know. Good. Let's go. Let's actually do some Hun bashing, shall we? Great.
Sort of thing, yes. It is absolutely the case that he talks like that. But, of course, in the context here, especially when they're about before the German push to have both Raleigh and the schoolmaster, Lieutenant Osborne, first played, by the way, the first time it was staged, by Laurence Olivier, Daylight Raid is to get a German prisoner who will tell them the details of the German push. They know that almost certain death awaits. The conversation before that and their, as it were, pacing time, I mean, this is so moving. It's a play that tapped into so much after the war, and it really was a phenomenal success.
Of course, folk might well say that in a better world, there wouldn't be any war whatsoever. Did you see the way I did that sort of link there, opening up a whole new line from your perspective?
Indeed. Well, the film from Denmark, directed by Suzanne Bier, which won both at the Golden Globes and the Oscars for Best Foreign Film. Very difficult, actually, the choice of Best Foreign Film at the Oscars, and much criticised in recent years. A couple of years ago, for example, A White Ribbon and A Prophet didn't win and weren't even, as I remember, shortlisted, which was the subject of a good deal of debate as to how they narrow this down. But here's a film which is very, very fine.
How couldn't The Adventures of Adèle Blanc-Seing actually get some notion this year? I mean, what's happening with these worlds? Are they just ignoring all French films completely?
Well, I mean, as far as the Delplon song is concerned, as far as I'm concerned, the pterodactyl, which she rides
yes.
with such aplomb, would plunge into the Seine and never re-emerge.
Oh.
I thought it was terrible.
Oh, terrible, c'est terrible, c'est non, c'est fantastique.
There was one joke in it when the mummified Egyptian king looks at the Louvre Palace and suggests that he could build a pyramid there, having been reactivated. But I was not. The problem was that I was all but somnolent throughout the load of London.
See, this, Richard, is why I avoided bringing this up when Jodie had our colleague Emmeline in the studio, because I thought that could, again, just tip the balance between Anglo-French relationships. Mm-hmm. And I thought we can't criticise the Adventures of Adèle Blanc.
No, but believe me, when you've got Potiche on, you can say anything that you like because it's such a wonderful film. It's so funny. Yeah. Catherine Deneuve, Gérard Depardieu, all these... Fabrice Luchini, I mean, a wonderful
but
performance.
But Gérard Depardieu has problems with his bladder these days in aircraft, as well.
No doubt about that.
Exactly.
I mean, the trouble is, it's a great pity for his image, because when you talk of Depardieu, or did before, I mean, images of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Manon des Sources.
Oh, I mean, so many famous roles came into vision, into your mind. Oh. I mean, came into view, so to speak. And now, unfortunately...
Think of a man urinating on a plane. What's going on here? So.
Well, I mean, the publicity was very, very embarrassing. I mean, there's no question. I think he's probably pretty mortified. Or perhaps he's beyond mortification. It was always a tragedy that Depardieu never won an Oscar for Cyrano. A rumour had it that this had something to do with an interview which was claimed to be mistranslated, which appeared, I think it was in Newsweek, and there were, or implied, that when young there had been sexual activity with those who he should not have been tampering.
However, let's just hold it there because it's time to bring Jodie Orton into the Jodie Challenge today. Jodie, you have this party piece of 6 degrees of separation from Kevin
yes.
Bacon. Mm-hmm. So can you do it and connect Gérard Depardieu to Kevin Bacon? Richard is waiting.
Okay.
So is the listener.
Countdown clock.
Okay. Gérard Depardieu was in Green Card with the one from Four Weddings and a Funeral, Andy McDowell, who was in Four Weddings and a Funeral with Kristin Scott Thomas, who was in Random Hearts with Harrison Ford. You see, ever since I told Alex this was my party piece, he just keeps throwing these challenging ones to me.
It was a very brave attempt.
It was a brave attempt, but there's only one thing to do when a brave attempt fails, and that is to send for Brendan Gleeson.
Send for Brendan Gleeson, always.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he'll sort matters out. Believe me, you see the guard, then you'll realise that with Gleeson breathing fire and fury down, you'd remember the link, believe me.
He's not Brendan George of the Jungle, is he?
Brendan Fraser.
Sorry, Fraser. I often confused Brendan Gleeson, just checking on that sort of basis. You know, he could have been the person who was actually in The Mummy as well, 1, 2, and 3, but obviously not.
Well, Rachel Weisz, of course, was, and I've not forgotten my meeting with her, because she was in Suddenly Last Summer, and it was wonderful to see her as Catherine on stage and go backstage to congratulate her, because that was the role that stretched her. And subsequently, we've been seeing in recent films, at long last, she's managed to escape The Mummy and Land Girls and this sort of thing.
Well, interesting enough, Richard, on the broadcast team of colleagues that we actually have on the Midweek Drive and Media Matters and various other packages, we have Rosalind Anderson, a television producer, who in fact put together the team that was indeed Ewan McGregor, Danny Boyle and Rachel Weisz, because Rachel had a major break in the Scarlet and Black adaptation of Stendhal's work a few years ago on film. So it all connects together, you see.
That's it does, and I mean, I have to say I didn't see it, regrettably, but nonetheless, she's a star to be reckoned with. There's no question. The Constant Gardener showed her also on screen at her very best. But back to Gleeson, if you want a scene-stealing performance, the most outrageous, it's directed by John Michael McDonagh, who amusingly and entertainingly is the brother of the Martin McDonagh who wrote in Bruges. very, very similar films too. So there's obviously some acerbic Irish humour that runs in this
family. I was going to say, biting acerbic dialogue and the uncontrollable Gleeson is just a quote that we've actually taken directly from your good self about, obviously, the fabulous movie entitled The Guard.
You can't control Gleeson. I mean, he's all but a force of nature. I mean, from the most outrageous tampering with the evidence to racist language to a visiting FBI cop, Gleeson is idiosyncratic. He has a couple of hookers dressed as police.
Is he not
women.
Just challenging Colin Farrell or Colin Farrell?
Well, I mean, Farrell, I have to say, I've never forgiven for this. I have to be frank about it. When I saw Colin Farrell in
Daredevil, perhaps, where he was Bullseye.
In fact, I'm thinking of Phone Booth when he had to sweat it out with a mystery marksman about who could kill him at any moment. And there, I felt sorry for him, as well one might. And the police officer.
It's only a movie, Richard. It wasn't real.
Well, but I'm coming to the sad part, and that is that I saw this was a movie, and it definitely wasn't real, and it was called Alexander. If you experienced that, then you really would want to disappear.
Well, you know, it was an attempt to bring back the sword and sandal epic that was there with lots of strapping young men slapping things on themselves and marching through all sorts. It didn't do a great deal for me, admittedly, but, you know, I can understand there might be a market for it.
Well, your market for it was the lowest possible denominator. It was absolutely terrifying. It was so bad, critics were laughing at the screening.
Why not treat yourself this bank holiday weekend, Richard, and have a back-to-back screening of Alexander and Troy?
But we have to establish that the epic disappeared, or but disappeared, with Waterloo and Tora Tora in 1970. I'm talking about the battle epic, because obviously Gandhi, the last emperor, and Braveheart revived it. Then we had Gladiator reviving the sword and sandals, for which, I mean, certain such films can be extremely good. But
Spartacus, for instance.
But then we're looking forward that we had Troy, which was a murderous experience. But Alexander was simply, I mean, it's so bad that it's almost impossible to describe how utterly ghastly it was.
Sounds like a recommendation to me.
I have to seriously say this, because this was a chilling experience. But I was reviewing at the Hermitage in Amsterdam the exhibition about Alexander, a pretty hagiographic, I have to say, to see and hear Colin Farrell in the background, because they were playing some of the film on television.
Oh, dear.
What can I say?
Look, it could have been worse. It could have actually had the joys of Alexander with Morris dancing. In fact, there is a theory that he might have been an early Morris dancer.
Yes, it wouldn't have been surprising. I have to say the film contained one of the most embarrassing Tarzan Jane love sequences, sex scenes, or whatever you want to call
it. Whatever.
Alexander married a mountain
shepherdess, exactly.
A woman.
Oh, please.
Oh, dear. Well, I know that. I mean,
how unlike the dear home life of our very own Her Majesty. But
that was a good one. Yes, because this was in the Victorian times. I think it was someone who'd seen Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra who said that, was it not?
Indeed, sir. Indeed, sir.
But one sees a film like The Guard, and their dialogue is so delicious. I once worked for Patrick McGinley, who was an Irish novelist and who wrote books such as Bogmell and Foggage and so forth. And there's no doubt within the Irish there is...
Sure enough, they've got away with the word, haven't they? They've got a touch of the Blarney on them, haven't they? A sort of portrait of the artist as a young man from South Africa. Oh, you will. You will.
You're perhaps right. Yeah.
Jodie, have you got any questions you'd like to put to the wonderful Richard Fitzwilliams?
Not with an Irish accent,
no.
Well, perhaps, Jodie, would you agree with me that you'd be terribly, terribly sympathetic to an FBI cop, and who's Don Cheadle, so of course he's the black man, and he has to work with the likes of, well, as I say, a force of nature like Gleeson, on a drugs raid, and the Garda are pretty corrupt too.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you feel a certain sympathy?
I think so, yes.
And I've got to turn around and say, actually, I caught Don Cheadle recently in a little treat. I was watching Mission to Mars with Tim Robbins. And don't laugh, you know, I quite enjoyed it. You know,
I know you like your sci-fi stuff.
Well, Brian De Palma directed it. You know?
Well, it was Brian De Palma. This was in the days before he turned into the person who, I'm being polite, made a film as bad, and it's very hard to make a film as... It's almost the Alexander of anti-war genre of the redacted. Did you see it?
He had so much promise after Dress to Kill that people wondered where he was actually going. But, you know, Mission to Mars, I think, is worth it. Anyway, time is getting on as ever, Richard. We want to tease ahead to next week, The Skin I Live In, and One Day, which we'll be focusing on in all sorts of other fabulous things. Last two questions for Richard Fitzwilliams, please. Leslie.
Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us this morning?
I've had an extremely entertaining chat, and also it's given me the chance of plugging Journey's End, which I really hope that people can take advantage of because it's so wonderful, and also The Guard, and In a Better World, which I have to say I do recommend. It's been great fun.
Excellent stuff. And can we look forward to connecting with you in the very near future?
Well, that depends if anyone goes Morris dancing.
I promise not to, apart from we can't, Richard, we can't stop Joy Knight.
And they are actually going camping. Unbelievable. Still, never mind. just, who would have thought it? Richard Fitzwilliams, we'll be back again very soon.